Dublab. Welcome to The Quarantine Tapes, a daily podcast from Onassis, LA and Dublab. Hosted by Paul Holdengraber, this series chronicles shifting paradigms in the era of social distancing.
Hello, hello.
Hello, could I please speak with Arman Nafei?
That is he.
Arman, what a pleasure to have you on this call. Thank you so much for taking the time for being part of the Quarantine Tapes, which is co-presented by Onassis LA and Dublab. Tell me, Arman, how have you been living these last 14 delirious months, and where might I find you?
The last 14 months were quite adventurous, to say the least. I think for all of us. I was in Los Angeles, where I technically live, during the first lockdown, and then I slowly managed my way back to Europe. So from last summer onwards, I was in Paris, I was in Milan, I was in Berlin, I was in Cologne, now I'm in Ibiza, and hopefully I'll stay here throughout the summer. We shall see. But yeah, I just kind of went with the circumstances and, you know, just float along.
When you say you're technically in Los Angeles, how do you mean that?
That I still have my house there, and the plan is to return this fall. But my work with the Chateau Marmont, I've been the music director for André Ballas for the past 10 years. And the reason why I live in Los Angeles is because of the Chateau Marmont. And we were working on a project for a private club, which was our first business together. And that obviously is now on hold. So the main reason why I was in LA is kind of on hold right now. But I do still feel the urge to return because it became my home over the past few years.
I shouldn't be one to talk about accents, I suppose, considering that I'm a little bit of a linguistic monster. But in you, I hear a German accent with a very un-German name. So, so if you could help for our listeners unpack Arman for us, in terms of both. Where you're from originally and perhaps where your parents are from and how it came about that you speak the way you do.
Well, I am Persian, hence the Persian name. My parents are from Iran, but I was born in Cologne, Germany, hence the German-infused accent. But I went to an English school and moved to London when I was 17. And then at the age of 25, moved to New York. So my accent kind of adapts to my environment. It's a little bit of everything in there. And even though, especially living in when I was living in the UK, I was trying to have a more British accent, I guess, in a way, which would never happen, at least not fully. But now I actually embrace this multi-culti, gypsy, like vagabond kind of accent, because it kind of, that's who I am. That's my story. That's my life story. It's like having scars on your body. So I actually embrace it. And it also reflects in my musical taste and knowledge and interest, which is very broad and very eclectic and very worldly. And that's, I think, a nice representation. So I'm standing with my accent these days. How about you?
Well, you know, you're turning the tables on me. Well, you know, I know
Paul Holdengraber.
Yeah, Holdengraber with an umlaut on top of it all.
Yes, and you know, exactly.
Where is he from? And people ask me this question all the time, and I tell them I wish I knew, but the point is my parents were Austrian from Vienna, my grandparents were Österreicher, my grandparents were Russian and Romanian, my sister was born in Mexico City, And I, as you can probably tell immediately, I was born in Houston, Texas, where I spent 4 very important days, the memory of which is slight. So, as I often say, nothing that 10 or 12 or maybe 15 years of therapy can't help or cure. But, but it hasn't happened yet. Now, back to you, because I know the tricks of the trade. Back to you. Your parents emigrated from Iran?
Yes. So basically before the revolution, I think the first part of my family already in the late 50s headed to Germany. They're all doctors and they settled there. And then my father went back for the revolution and then came back to Germany. And they've been never returned since the revolution in 79. So they've been in Germany ever since. My sister and I were born in Germany, and well, she was born in the UK, but yeah, grew up in Germany, and pretty much it.
And from your parents, what was handed down to you in terms of, you know, both perhaps literary taste, musical taste, culture in a broad way? I heard, for instance, in one of your podcasts, and we'll come to that, of course, you mention Hafiz. So I imagine that world sits on your shoulders in some way.
Absolutely. I mean, I come from a very happy and intellectual family, and I'm very, very fortunate for that. My dad is, I think, 20 years older than my mom, but he was also quite intellectual. He was a journalist, surrounded by books. We always, in Persian culture, you always have big gatherings, which as a child, I didn't obviously, you know, you don't want to participate. You want to be hanging out with adults when you're a kid. But now in hindsight, knowing what it was so incredible to have this rich history in your living room, sitting there. We're talking about like 20, 30 grown-ups, poets, musicians, writers, politicians, I mean, all kinds of people, and they're just reciting Hafez or, you know, talking about politics and playing music and having wonderful conversations and delicious food that my mom was literally cooking for 2 days straight. And having that heritage now, being a so-called adult, I appreciate and I understand more, and so I was very, very fortunate, and I think that obviously plays a big role in my life, and that's like the more Persian side. But then my mom always introduced me, or my uncle as well, at a very young age to classical music. There was a lot of classical music in our household, and that also played a big role in my life, subconsciously and consciously. And I can tell the older I get, the more I am like them too. Which is not a bad thing, but yeah, here we are.
Here we are, and take us now to, from Ibiza, take us now to where I am in Los Angeles, and to what you work as a directeur d'ambiance, a fantastic title. I'd like to have a title like that when I grow up. For the Chateau Marmont, which itself has changed hands, I believe, recently. So I'm just curious what that is, if you could describe it, because it certainly feels like a position that Armand Naffay invented.
Yes, it pretty much is. I mean, my official title always was, I was hired when I was 25 for the Boom Boom Room at the Standard Hotel in New York City. I was living in London, but I was hired by Andre as a music director, not knowing what even a music director is and does. And also back then, you know, there were maybe not even a handful of people that I knew who were music directors, meaning making sure that your brand, your space, whatever, has a specific sound and kind of taking care of that, like a designer, like an architect, and having a DNA. So that's how it started. But then my role, and combined with my personality, it kind of morphed into something else, because it was not just music. I was, you know, I was also a host. I was also make sure the lighting is right, the guests are happy, the curation of the guests, the curation of the music, the curation of the food and beverage, you know. So all these things start to play in. I guess that's also part of my Persian heritage and culture. Hospitality is number one. And as I say, like, Persian culture is the most hospitable culture in the world, and for a reason. I mean, they go to insane lengths to take care of their guests. So that kind of morphed. And at some point, Andre introduced me as his first cultural attaché at some point, and then into a director of ambiance. And I was like, well, director of ambiance in English sounds stupid. So I was like, let's make it a zhuzh it up and call it Directeur d'Ambiance. It's so much better. So it became my thing, and I'm sticking to it. And it kind of is silly and also very, in my opinion, very light and very something very intangible. You know, what is the Directeur d'Ambiance? What is ambiance? I mean, that's the first question to ask. It's something so airy and fluffy, but yet so important. But most places and most people don't pay attention to these little details. And that's why a lot of failures happen, you know, or why some events or some moments in your life were so special and significant is because the ambiance was right.
In a way, that's what you remember.
That left a mark in your life, in your memory, yeah? I mean, that's creating these little moments, these little pockets of joy that people take away for the rest of their life. I mean, that's priceless, you know. We all have them.
We all have them. But not particularly now.
Not particularly now, but we do have memories and moments of the now, which we will take with us. And even in the darkest moments, I always see something positive. And in a way, what a moment to be alive. And I mean, we all, I hope, who also was listening, we've been very fortunate in a way to kind of, in a way, get away with it all and to see the light at the end of the tunnel. You know, and yeah, I mean, what do we have left if we don't have positivity?
And in a way, Aman, it seems to me that this is a beautiful segue to what you created a little over a year ago, which is namely this podcast called "Are We on Air?" which I've had the pleasure to listen to in preparing to speak to you. So perhaps you could give me a sense of why this undertaking, and as a good dish might be, what the ingredients are and what you're searching for through this auditory pleasure you're trying to offer listeners, what you're trying to achieve with this at this moment, at this juncture, because I see it as emanating really from this moment. And of course, with all the background you were describing, namely the classical music you grew up with, the music and culture generally speaking, perhaps even the food and a certain form of hospitality.
Yeah, I think Are We On Air and also the quarantine tapes pretty much launched at the same time, early last year. Also with our friends at Dublab Radio. I think that's where our connection is as well. And the idea of Are We On Air kind of appeared a year before that, which, because being Directeur d'Ambiance at the Chateau, I meet all these wonderful and great creative minds from all different fields, from different generations. And being fortunate enough to have the access and also have the access to have conversations, meaningful conversations, with these people, be it in the garden, by the lobby bar, or by the piano. I was like, why not record these conversations and these people that I work with or that come through my life and share that access and that knowledge and the stories with the wider audience, with the public. So I already had like 2-3 interviews. I started a couple of interviews end of 2019. And they were already, I was very fortunate and lucky enough to have Patti Smith, Julian Schnabel, and Too Many DJs as my first episodes, because I just had, they were just there. I just had access to them. I reached out. And the plan was not to launch in the series in spring 2020. But with the lockdown, I was like, now is the moment. Everybody's at home. Everybody is scared. Everybody is worrisome, including myself. And I was like, why not share this little ball of energy, of positive energy?
Right.
And hopefully bring some glimpse and some hope somehow it'll escape from the darkness of the uncertainty that we all had in March, April, May last year. We did not know what this is, so it was very uncertain. A lot of things have changed. A lot of people were let go and scared to catch this virus, whatever it is and whatever it was. So I thought, okay, now let's share this privilege with the world. And honestly, the feedback from a lot of strangers since then, it's been heartwarming, honestly. Like, people reaching out to me, thanking them for sharing in such an intimate and personal way. It's, because it's not really a Q&A. I'm not a journalist. I just kind of record what I've always been experiencing, all these moments, these pockets of joy that I experience for myself or for people who are in the spaces in those moments with me, that I was able to share this with the world. And getting that feedback was, for me, and is for me, the greatest joy and my little way to share some love.
So, Armin, if I had to ask you this question, which might come to you as a total surprise, could you could you describe yourself with three songs?
Yeah, I don't know why I exposed my guest to this question, but basically, the idea is I have like around 10 questions, and it's very chronologically, like from what's your earliest significant musical memory to how would you describe yourself with three songs or three records, and then we go into the subject of who they are, and then we close it with some closing questions. But the idea is music is such a visceral medium that it's very challenging to describe yourself with three songs, and it's indefinite, and the soundtrack of your life changes throughout your life.
So try now to do that for yourself. Yeah. Don't think for one moment that I will let you get away with just telling me what you do on your show. Let me repeat my question. Describe yourself with three songs. Yeah.
Okay. I would choose either a track by Pavarotti or Maria Callas, because that's what my uncle and my mom would listen all day, every day when I was growing up. I would probably pick, I don't know which track, but maybe, let's go very obvious. Let's go Nessun Dorma with Pavarotti, because it's just, why not add some drama and start this little Italian drama? So let's use Nessun Dorma. Then I would go with something disco, because disco plays a big role in my sound and in my life and what I listen to. And it's an upper. It's very positive. It's good energy. And disco, it's not a genre, in my opinion. It's more of an energy and a feel. Again, millions of tracks. I would probably pick something by Teddy Pendergrass. Incredible voice. Incredible energy, sad ending, but he just had, there was so much sexiness and beautiful energy behind his music. Which track would I choose by him? Let's have a look. Why don't we have a look? And then as a third track, I would probably go with If I Ever Feel Better by Phoenix, which is this indie rock pop band from France, because that's my go-to heartbreak song. It's If I Ever Feel Better. Again, it's such a beautiful, fun, upbeat song, but the lyrics are also a nice pick-me-up when you're heartbroken or if you're down. It's nice to have a confidant, or in general, if you have a confidant in, find a confidant in music, and having someone talk about what they've been through, which sounds similar to what you've been through, is a helpful crutch. And having good upbeat music behind it is even better, instead of a downer. So those will be my three tracks.
The music, what you just said, the music helps you understand that you're not alone. And what was interesting about your first choice, particularly thinking about Maria Callas, is that that was very much the music that Marina Abramovitz chose. And I recall, many, many years ago when I had the pleasure of interviewing Patti Smith at the New York Public Library, The very first thing we spoke about was her love of Maria Callas and how when she is in Milano, she tries to stay in the very suite where Maria Callas stayed.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
wow. Also music in a way, and perhaps in this moment in time, as a way of hearkening back to the past.
Just to quickly go back to Patty, her song, her earliest significant musical memory that she chose was also Madama Butterfly, Un Bel Di, but by Elena Stiva.
Right.
So it's interesting that she talks about Maria with you, but that's cool.
The music in a way is you know, in this calamitous time we're living through, the music is what we can hold on to that brings us back memories of the past. And you were mentioning before your relationship with Dublab, and I'm curious how you think about Dublab, you know, in terms of it being unaffiliated in many ways and truly fiercely independent.
Well, I know how challenging it is being independent, but I also know how fulfilling it is to be independent. So I think that's what makes Dublab so special. And, you know, and I think we have now a 2-year relationship. Before that, I always came every few weeks when I discovered some very interesting records through my searches and discoveries. And I just came to play them on the radio to share them with the world. And with Ale, and you know, if that freedom also allows something like this to happen, whereas if it's dependent, it's a bit more rigid and it has to be by nature become more corporate in a way where it's a bit more linear. So it's a double-edged sword, obviously, but I think places such as Dublab are very, very important for creativity, for an underground voice to exist. And these places were analog and now they're digitalized, but they do need to exist.
Tell me about the passion I understand you have, perhaps incurable, for collecting records.
I mean, I don't think I have any addictions, but I do like beautiful objects, and that also includes collecting rare or interesting records to me. And I do like, as a storyteller myself, I do like when it has history and when it has patina and when it has a story to tell. Actually, two shows I did on Dublab Radio. One was I bought Hugh Hefner's jazz record collection.
Yes, yes. I heard about this through the grapevine. Tell me about that.
Hi, Ale. I always look at auction houses. I mean, not talking about Sotheby's. We're talking more like smaller ones. And by chance, I saw on my friend's Insta story, he was at the Hefner, you know, there's a preview, you can look at, you know, it's like an exhibition, you see what's on for sale.
Yeah.
And I saw the membership card from Hefner. It was his estate auction, and I saw one of the items was the Studio 54 membership card. And at that time, because of my little private club that I was building at the Chateau, I thought that would be a cool reference to have, and because the idea was to have some sort of membership card idea, whatever it is. So that's why I registered. And then on the second page, I saw basically his record collection. And what most people don't know, Hefner was a huge jazz aficionado.
Yeah.
And he was a pioneer music and also playing and showing black musicians on U.S. television in the 50s, which, you know, and mixed in a wide program. And that was kind of revolutionary. That was new. And so, of course, my eyes were on the price and there were different lots, but I was very fortunate. There were only like 3-4 bids on it. And I got 100 records, 100 jazz records with personal notes and letters in between, and also the rhythm and blues section as well. I mean, incredible.
What is your favorite item in that collection?
There are a lot of, but one of them, and that's where I guess the circle comes round again and closes. There was one record by Dizzy Gillespie, and on the back it said, It was a handwritten note by Hefner, just a little comment where it said, I think it was something like, it's too loud, too shrill, it's not up to par. So obviously he was a huge Dizzy fan. There's a lot of Dizzy Gillespie records. But this one in particular, it was live. I forgot which record it was. But the track, I'll never forget that. I played that at Dublet Radio. And that's when Ali was interviewing me. So that became the background song while we were talking. And the song is called Our Love Is Here to Stay. And when I re-listened to that episode of me playing that set and Ali and I talking, that song somehow got stuck in my subconscious somewhere. So when I came around to look for my intro song for Are We On Air, that was immediately came. This is the song. Without even knowing what track exactly it was, but I remember that sound I was after. And that is the show's intro theme.
Right. amazing how things can come back as an echo.
I love it.
And you know, Dizzy, perhaps speaking about joy and those pockets of joy you were talking about just a few moments ago, there is one record of Dizzy where joy is just so prevalent and there's such pleasure in it. It's a record that Dizzy Gillespie did when he was in the south of France at the Côte d'Azur. Mm. I don't know if you know it, but it is just so, with Schifrin, it is so beautiful. I highly, highly recommend it. In closing, very sadly, might I add, and I'm wondering, on your podcast, which is just a year old at this point, which would you say was the most surprising response you got?
That's a good question, because you would think it's, of course, the biggest name on the lineup. And again, the part of curation of the lineup is what is just as interesting to me as the music itself and the conversation. And I do want to catch a broad spectrum of guests and audience, so that's why I keep it very diverse. But there were a lot of great surprises, and for me, I think personal highlights, of course, was being in Paris with Jane Birkin in her home. I mean, that for me, that would stay with me forever. That was incredible. But I think the most surprising response from, I think, in terms of listenership and feedback, there's so many. Which one would I choose? That's a good question. I have to think about this. You know what? It might be my friend, the artist. She's from Los Angeles. Her name's Ariana Papadimitropoulos. I was quite surprised at the feedback and the interest in her. She's a great artist, up and coming as well. She's represented by Vito Schnabel and shows at Deitch and a face of Gucci, and it does beautiful, beautiful art. And her world, her orbit that she created, she lives that life. I mean, she is that person. It's not a character or something. It's very, very old Hollywood meets, I don't even have to describe it. You have to see her work. You have to see her. It's incredible. But I think people were really interested in what she, because music, obviously, it's part of her orbit, of her universe. I think people are very interested in her, what her sound is. So I think that did really well. I was surprised about, I mean, it was a great episode, but I was surprised at the interest in it. That was great.
And it's been such a pleasure to talk with you. And I hope when you return to what technically is your home, we meet when we can again see each other more than just virtually. Have a good time in Ibiza. It must be hard. And I send you all my very, very best. And thank you for this moment in time.
Paul, it's been a real pleasure. And I hope I'll be able to interview you when we see each other in Los Angeles.
Well, let's
see. Let's see. In the meantime, I'll enjoy this glass of rosé and the sunset. And I send my love and regards to Los Angeles.
All the best. All the best. Take good care. Bis bald.
You too.
Bye-bye.
To support this show and Dublab's progressive programming, go to dublab.com/support.